heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Things that at one point would not have seemed normal, things that would have seemed, would have gotten more outrage, or we would have all been, well, that's not acceptable. We're not going to allow that. We're not going to accept that. We're not going to have that happen. It's now happening. And we're now seeing these things that nobody's really even responding back or paying attention. So one of the things you want to be careful of, let's put that to the side a moment, but is this desensitization that is happening in our great nation, okay? So just remember that. We're no longer being shocked at what we see. That's not a good thing. Not a good thing for a lot of reasons. You then have all of these outside influences that are playing in all of the things we're talking about, whether it's the election, but also all of the uprisings in America's cities, and the outside influences to do with COVID and the pandemic. And I mean, listen, we have a lot of enemies. We just do, you know. And certainly freedom, liberty, democracy all have a lot of enemies, okay? America has a lot of enemies, but everything we stand for has a great deal of enemies. It's important to understand that as well. Not everybody likes our way of life. They don't like the way we are, the way we think, the way we act, the way we be. They don't, and they're trying to take America down, certainly a few pegs, but they're trying to do more than that. Now, the problem with all that, you'd think that, well, some people believe that America can handle it. We can stand all of this off, and it will be okay. But here's the danger I want to warn you about right now. There are a lot of people in America, and I'm talking regular citizens, people that might be listening now, might not be, but regular people, real people out there, okay? There's a lot of politicians for sure, and a lot of people in the political spectrum and in the corporate spectrum as well. So there's just a lot of people that are being used as useful idiots. Now, some of these people, their heart may very well be in the right place. I'm not suggesting it's not. They may love America, truly, and the real America that we all love. And they could very well, not suggesting they hate America. But what's happening is they're getting caught into this whole movement. And it really is that. So you have the, you know, the guys of peaceful protest, but the grassroots movement part of it, who are really looking for change in America in a good way. And that's all good. I mean, you know, change is good when it's for the right reasons and it's in that right concept. Not change for the sake of change and not change for the sake of undoing our American experiment. That's not the kind of change we want or we're talking about. But the change to improve our beautiful land and our republic, absolutely. Let's talk about that and let's look at that and improve life for everybody. Shouldn't that be the goal? Of course it should. I plead with you, my fellow Americans, that this has got to be the goal and we've got to reach across the aisle, both right and left, back and forth, and bring people together the best that we can. Now, we're not going to get the extremists. We're not going to get the other people with a different agenda. So just forget that. And don't waste your time, and don't waste your breath. Don't even waste your social media characters on that. Let's play offense and more from a proactive standpoint. Does that make sense? That's how we stop this thing from exploding. It's how we, you know, eliminate that spark so that it doesn't become a match that sets off a forest fire, that becomes a bonfire, that becomes a potential civil war that really tears America down. Let's not go there, my fellow Americans. So we're being set up here. There are far too many people, many in the hearts in the right place, and they're being set up as useful idiots in a lot of ways. There are people who've been playing us out for a while, and they've set this thing up now where we really are a tinderbox. We are ready to just explode, implode, become the next big moment in America's history, and not a good moment at all for us, because the damage will be, can be, and will be extensive, and we don't want to see that happen. There are a lot of political people in this country that are standing by watching shit burn down, and they're watching things happen, and they're not doing anything about it, because they look at our president as more of a risk than China. They look at him as more of a risk than the nefarious people and the radical extremists and the Marxists who are trying to take us down. They look at the president as far more of a higher risk to our republic and to our liberty than these other evil forces. Oh, we can't have it. You know, I see a report that I must share with you, which tells you how crazy this is and how bad things are. This is a report coming from Axios, and they have that Axios on HBO. You know what I'm talking about, I believe. And so a top Democratic analytics firm, basically, is at the center of this story. And that firm is Hawkfish Headquarters. Potentially you know about it or have heard about it. Hawkfish Headquarters. They're out of New York. And so they're talking about, and the headlines, it's pretty revealing. They're saying there's going to be a landslide victory for Donald Trump on election night. And typically, we know who the president is by the time we go to bed that evening on election day. Historically, that's happened in America, but that election back in Bush and Gore became the hanging chad spectacle heard around the world. We became a laughingstock that played all the way to South Florida. And that involved so many attorneys and lawsuits and problems that went on and on. And it was an embarrassment to our nation. And now the potential is in place for that to become a blip on the radar screen. And we may make that look like a nothing burger with the current problem, which is why you've been hearing so much about the United States Postal Service. And you've been hearing so much about universal mail-in voting and absentee voting. There are a lot of people that have been trying to confuse the public. They've been trying to confuse the people with the difference, and they've actually called out Trump as far as that he doesn't want to let people vote, that he's trying to hold people back from voting. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, and you know that. And if you don't know that, I'm telling you, and I give you my word, that's not true. Not true at all. Every American should have the right and the privilege to vote. It is an American right. It is the center of our democracy and our republic. We are a representative republic. We have an electoral college that is in place. They've tried to hit that down as well in recent times. So it wasn't a United States, that it was just a California and New York gig. Wrong. That's not what our country is all about. It's not the freedoms and the liberties we're based on. It's not the United States. It's very clear why we have the system we have in play. But the problem is, they've really done their damnedest to confuse people with this mail-in vote. And like, what's wrong with just mailing everybody votes in the light of COVID, you know, kind of thing? The argument is can you, you know, keep the vote legitimate if you're mailing these ballots to, you know, dead people and people that want to go in and do multiple votes? There's just so many problems. The system is set up to fail. And we're not set up for this kind of thing. The absentee vote, and absolutely, and that you should be able to request it and get it in, 100% absolutely. But to just mail them out, lock, stock, and barrel to whatever, whoever, when the voter rolls are not accurate and they're not proper and they're not together, is setting ourselves up for a problem. Everybody should agree with this, but they're not. So Hawkfish, they're coming out and they're saying, well, they expect a landslide victory, very much that, well, let me read you this here. It says, it means Trump, thanks to Republicans doing almost all of their voting in person, that they could hold a big electoral college and popular vote lead, even the popular vote, by the way, on election night, that he will look like a landslide victory. But imagine America with its polarization and misinformation if the vote tally swings wildly toward Joe Biden and Trump loses days later as the mail ballots are counting. And this has been the fear all along. And this is why the country has been warned and people have been warned that you can't do this mail-in ballot thing. You can't change the rules at the last minute. It's wrong. Everybody should be able to vote. They can get out and picket and protest and burn shit down. They can certainly get out and vote. You got to stop this nonsense of the mask business and the pandemic and all that that's been. If Pelosi can go get her hair done, everybody else should be able to too. Or have a meal at a restaurant and not be criticized and ridiculed because you don't wear a mask. And that's a whole nother set of circumstances, which we're not going to talk about today. But this has all been lit, is my point. And we're all, you know, just, again, light the match and boom, you got a bonfire burning here. So Hawkfish says, well, you know, you got a real problem here because election night is going to look like, you know, Trump's got a landslide victory. And there are those people who are predicting that because the country is waking up to a lot of these games that are being played. But you see, a lot of the people on that other side, way over there, the extremists and the radicals and the Marxists and the socialists that are trying to tear the country apart and pull it in the other way, well, they're hell-bent on getting their goal accomplished. They don't care. They want him out of there, and they want to own the power. They want the power. That's the problem. And so they're suggesting, which is why they've set this whole thing up for a lot of the states, and they're trying to push, and a lot of these states are still in lawsuits, and we're suing each other and, you know, to gain the power back. And a lot of the Democrats who've been, they're much more fickle about the pandemic sort of thing. They're not understanding a lot of the evidence and that we've been had as a nation as well. That's another story as well for another day. And it's not about whether we agree or disagree on that. But they're dragging this thing out to the nth degree. And people are hurting. They're losing their businesses. They're losing their livelihoods. They're losing everything. Okay? And for what? You know, just the facts and the data don't support it. This whole thing. I mean, the CDC, we already know, we talked about it. 6% of the deaths might be real, but 94% are not. They all had other conditions and other problems in life. You know, people die from all kinds of things. So there's no way near 180 or 190 or 200,000 or whatever number you want to use that have died from this thing. This is not right. We've been misled. We've been lied to. Regardless of all that, put that aside. But you see what they've done now with the vote. They've got this vote right there on the balance where they say, okay, now, you know, we can't count your votes in time, okay? So now they're coming after and we'll change the election to get the outcome we want. The problem is you've got a lot of people in the system in a lot of these markets with the mayors and the governors who are controlling things, who are also allowing their cities and states to be vandalized and brutalized and burnt down and at the cost of people's livelihoods and lives, and they really don't care. They're okay with it. It's damage control. It's part of the cost of where America is right now. We're in a credible point. You can see what's happening now with this vote and why they've been pushing the vote so hard, because this is the Hail Mary at the end of the day where they're going to use that to get the result they want, because those Democrat mayors and governors and a lot of those people that are unwilling to help their fellow citizens out in those cities and towns who are being destroyed because they're okay with it. And they are definitely going to, how do I say, shift the vote. There's all kinds of things can be done in those markets when they make decisions on those votes. When they know what they need to win, the problem is they now know what that summary is, what the difference is. And that difference is what people, the potential danger is that they will try to make that up in the elections just after the election, post-election. So now they can take that, and that's going to be the fight. And now you talk about attorneys. There's not going to be enough attorneys on the planet to deal with this one. I mean, this is going to be this will roll over into the streets. This will roll over into your neighborhoods. This will roll over to be an American moment. Call it what you want. call it a civil war, call it a Fort Sumter moment, call it whatever. But that's where we would be, no matter what. So those are the stakes. I am absolutely fearful of where we're headed. I'm fearful of the outcome. I'm fearful for your life out there and for all of us and for our great majestic nation, that we are doing everything we possibly can to save and to secure for future generations. For the war on America's cities and claims of racism in the ranks of law enforcement have spirited a renewed debate on racial equality. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who reminded us, Americans are so enamored of equality, they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. To which I say, be warned of the shiny object, America. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, it's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
It's an interesting moment of time, but one of the things we've got to really watch now is this spark, this match that could potentially happen. And whether that happens before or after the election is the question. I'd like to bring on here Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro with us. Lieutenant Joe is a retired police lieutenant, director of school security, host of Chasing Justice here on America Out Loud. He's got a new book out as well. I'll tell you about it a little bit later. It's called The Interview. Very interesting. It's a training guide. Very fascinating book. We'll discuss that. He's got also an interesting piece and an op-ed, an article on AmericaOutloud.com. We'll talk about that as too, which I'll be referencing here. It's entitled, Then Someone Lit a Match. I want to get right to the juggler, Joe, in this conversation in this way here. So you say in your message, in your op-ed, we have one political party that is encouraging the violence as a way to cause political change, and we have another party that is sitting back watching it seemingly incapable of doing anything. And you say this is a recipe for greater carnage to come. Interesting way when you talk about Republicans and Democrats. Explain that, please.
Well, my purpose there was to not specifically say Republican or Democrat so that as people are reading it, they could match up what their eyes see and their ears hear to figure out who's doing what. Obviously, it's very clear that our friends on the left are using this this chaos, this rioting, this usurped protest for something that at a moment in time, the George Floyd death, where most Americans came together and could say, you know, that was not right. What happened to him? Maybe we can have this conversation and figure out how to change what needs to be changed. That was a good moment that we had. Unfortunately for Mr. Floyd, he was the pivot moment. But what has happened is that people on the left who have been in the background trying to change things, get rid of President Trump, you know, keep the swamp alive and keep their power base growing and move us to a socialist form of type of government, they saw this as an opportunity. And we had all these disparate groups come out and come together to cause this rioting in the streets. This is this seems pretty obvious to anyone who's watching it. The other side, what I am frustrated with is that our friends on the right, our Republican friends, really don't seem to be capable of doing anything about it. They are too afraid to say anything. In a cancel culture that we have, if you come out and say anything against these groups that are rioting, you're saying it not because it's detrimental to people's health and welfare and our country. You're saying it because you hate. And therefore, if you hate, you got to be canceled. So our politicians on the right are just kind of sitting back, waiting to see how this is going to go, so it affects them or doesn't affect them.
You know, another way to put it maybe, Joe, and what do you think about this? Does it kind of feel like a slow motion moment? Like, it almost sounds like with what you said there, like you can't seem to stop what you think is going to be happening and nobody is really listening. It's all fallen on deaf ears. So I get the sense that it's like a slow motion movie, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of like feet in a quicksand, slow motion movie. We all see this happening, and it's continuing. The nature of people to of mobs to grow and continue to be empowered. We're seeing that every day when they're going from, you know, just initially blocking traffic to dragging people out of cars to then burning buildings, then to attacking and killing people. You can't let this kind of an evil just run free, because it does nothing but metastasize. It gets worse and worse. And normally you would have people who would step in and stop this, even on a small scale in your local community. But now as a nationwide community, it's metastasizing and no one is stopping it.
So what I get out of all of that is it's sort of a desensitizing, isn't it? We're desensitizing the public now that this is all normal behavior, right?
You're right. It's almost like a spectacle on the news now. Let's see what they burned tonight. Let's see what happened tonight. Let's see who got dragged out of their car tonight, as opposed to it being real and it's coming to your town. Mm-hmm. That's when it's going to become real. And that's the moment, the potential flashpoint that I'm foreseeing.
Yeah. Well, and the question of that becomes how many people wake up or how many people really read this as a warning. Let me ask you, when you talk about these, some people would say random. I think we're past the point, at least I would suggest to you, we're past the point of random anymore. It doesn't seem to be random. Let's talk about the organization. How organized is all of this, do you feel? And do you have any thoughts or directness, any evidence, any conversations, anything that gives you a better sense than just speculation that this thing is truly organized in what they're trying to accomplish here?
Right. I think you have two divergent points going on. You have the grassroots people who are going out to join the fray because this is their chance to be a part of something. And we see a lot of young people out there doing it. Young people are always looking to be a part of something. The driver behind it, though, and you ask for evidence of this, they know that people are bussed into these events. They know when they make 200 arrests at these events, you know, 90% of them are not from the local area. These are people that are specifically brought in. You can see on social media, you'll be able to see there's posters that go out calling for rioters. They're paying people $20 an hour to come down and riot at a particular place. So this is a movement. Like I said earlier, it's usurped the protest. It's no longer a protest. It is open revolt. It is an insurrection. We're getting closer and closer to that point. But you do have people in the back driving, and the evidence is there for all to see. You don't bus people into a riot. You don't deliver loads of bricks and explosives and leave them in particular strategic areas so that they can be used by the mob later on. This is being pushed. This is a guerrilla warfare is really what we're seeing here.
Attorney General William Barr is, I'm hearing little rumblings of things where he seems to be on to what you're saying. Now, I'm hearing reports that, back to your point of being organized and busting them in, they know, supposedly, they have proof and they know that prior to these flashpoints, they're flying around the country. In fact, they're flying from Seattle, Washington, for instance, or Portland, and they're flying right into Washington, D.C., or they're flying right into Chicago or New York at these flashpoints. And they're becoming, you know, part of those movements and those uprisings in those markets. Now, I'm also understanding that a lot of these people have like listening devices in their ears. There's a lot of pictures and videos of this where they're like, you know, trained. They're like actors. So they're part of a larger group with the earplugs and like they're taking direction from something else. Is there proof of that as well? I mean, we're seeing the pictures and videos, but is that your sense?
I would say it's pretty obvious that when you have any kind of an organized mm-hmm. movement, and part of this is absolutely organized, mm-hmm. bringing people in, you want them to do certain things. Communication is the key to any group movement. So whether it's a police department going on a raid, everyone has communication devices, so we all know what we're supposed to do, what's going on. These groups are no different than that. They're out there. I'm sure there are people communicating where the police are, where the vehicles are moving in, where are vulnerable areas, and when to take particular action. You know, we see them throwing Molotov cocktails now to light buildings on fire. Well, a mob shows up at a particular area, a group shows up at that corner at a specific time, and then they start throwing the Molotov cocktails. That is not a random event. Although random events are built in here, like I said, this is a two-prong attack. You have grassroots people who are seeing the organized people doing things, and they're mimicking it. They're out there, you know, attacking a building or pulling somebody out of a car or smashing.
Do you think those people don't realize the seriousness of what this is, the grassroots I'm speaking of?
I don't know that they do, Malcolm. I think that's a very good point. I think they're seeing this opportunity for change, and right. this is how they're going to make it happen. I heard somebody screaming in one of these videos, and I thought it was very telling. They had just threw some fire bombs at a building, and as they were running away, the whole group moved at the same time to go away. Somebody screamed out, "Viva Revolucion." They scream that out at the top of their lungs. They're mimicking what they see as past historical events of this, but they don't realize they're in the middle of a conflagration of their whole country. This is moving almost to the point of out of control.
And there's a little bit of edginess and nervousness to the conversation. And then when you layer all that, Joe, along with the election, and you layer it all with the balloting, the votes, the mail-in vote, and the conversation that you're seeing A.G. Barr speaking up about right now when he says, you know, in his interview just recently with CNN, and he says, you know, you don't realize how dangerous this is and how reckless this is that people are promoting this. He was trying to, in other words, get some common sense into the Wolf Blitzer guy. Good luck with that. But they're still on their point of, they seem to be reckless and willing to gamble this thing. I guess in a lot of ways, I would say to you, they're gambling our nation away. I like the way you parsed a moment ago, grassroots, because there are a lot of people that back under the guise of peaceful protest, Joe, that they talk about that and the media uses that and the political people, certainly on the left and some on the right too, they continue to use that as some sort of a license to burn shit down and act like fools and vandalize and shoot people, as you say, which we know it's ridiculous on its face. But that grassroots movement, a lot of those people have linked up to this bigger, like you say, trained organizer, and they're using these people, not knowing they're being used. And probably a lot of people on the left and the right are being used from these outside forces. The question is, how do we identify more of this, bring this to the light of day, Joe, and how do we really turn the light on so that people understand the gravity of this? Because right now we're headed to a place that you point out, then someone lit a match, which I want to talk more about here, but that is a very dangerous place to be, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And that other voice that we're looking for, those are the people that I'm saying. You're talking about Attorney General Barr, who has done a tremendous investigation from what we understand on the coup d'etat against President Trump. We still have not heard a word about it other than one person has pled guilty. This Attorney General is, for all senses, doing the right thing. Now he's investigating where these groups are coming from, who's financing them. Well, if you ever look at federal investigations, they don't come to a point in 3 months. This will go on for 3.5 years. And if we change governments, if we change to the Biden administration, mm-hmm. his attorney general will immediately put a close on all of this and everything else going on. So we need expediency here. We need fast.
Yeah, there's no expediency, Joe.
Nothing at all.
No sense of urgency is there, and that's the problem. Yeah, that's a real problem. No sense of urgency at all. And, you know, that brings up the point right now. Do you notice you're not hearing anything, at least we haven't in past days here, about John Durham?
Nothing. Yeah. It's there's a complete lack of what's going on. We had the one attorney from the FBI plead guilty. Now, I thought as an investigator, you know, this is how you normally do it. You take some low-lying fruit, some people who were involved to the point of culpability. You get a good case on them. You arrest them. You charge them. You threaten them with prison time. And then they flip and they will help you to make a bigger case. And I said, okay, this might be the first shoe dropping here. This young man doesn't want to go to prison. He's an attorney. He's going to start giving up, you know, the information. Well, that information very well may come out in year three of Trump's third term or second term. But it's hopefully we would be great if it came out tomorrow and we found out, just tell us who you've already indicted. Who are you physically going after? Start arresting some people, because if it gets too close to the election, it can look like it is a ploy.
It's already too close to the election. You know this is going to be another spark in your story here. You know that, whatever's going to happen, right?
Yeah. The election is going to be a flashpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, you're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't. What I'm speaking about is if the attorney general, I think he's well aware, they're all aware, actually, if they move now, they should have moved about a year ago on this thing. There should have been some answers and indictments or, you know, there's been enough evidence over the past 3.5-4 years now that, you know, somebody did something, right, as they say, you know?
Absolutely.
And but there's nobody really paying a price for anything. And now we're on the verge of this major election, as you say. Do the voices go silent if the gamble is this. I mean, does he spill his beans now? Does he spill his guts and just take his chances with the election upon us? You know, the left is going to yell bloody murder. I mean, they're going to go ballistic because that's what happened with Comey. Tried all those games with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump back then. And that's what's going to be the case right now. They're going to scream foul. But at the same time, if you wait, there's a major risk. If anything doesn't go the right way and they try to do what I've been explaining to people with the election, we're in a heap of trouble there, aren't we?
We absolutely are. When you look at it, Malcolm, if this was on the other direction, if the left was leading this and had this information, they would not give 2 iotas of concern about what it looked like. They are determined in their point of view. They stick together on message. They would take this out immediately and start arresting people and doing what they had to do. They wouldn't worry about the optics of it because the media would go along with them. The media would paint it as this is the greatest thing a government ever did, as opposed to kowtowing those on the right, which is why I'm saying they're sitting there waiting to see how it's going to come out. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. There's a time you have to step up and you have to be a patriot and you have to do what's right for your country and for the people who live here, and to hell with the job. If you don't get reelected because you did the right thing, you sleep well at night. You know what? Go find another job. But we need someone. We need patriots to stand up now that are in our government that we've elected to do the right thing, come forward and say, listen, I don't care what it looks like. This was wrong. And this is what happened, and stop this. They're not doing that. They're failing us.
Yeah. They're not doing that at all. And one of the things we're going to need is we've got to reach to the independents. We got to reach to the moderates. We have to reach to the center aisle, to the Democrats just left of center. The things that I've been telling you all out there and what Lieutenant Joe and I are talking about right now is what I'm saying is, and I think Joe will understand it, I want you to know out there what we're speaking about, that, you know, the more we run around and we keep screaming Republican, Democrat, left and right, and it's hard, and I give you this, it's hard to have some of these conversations without doing that, because you have to call out what you have to call out as part of the risk factor here. But the point is that the more we play to that divide, the more we're not going to bring those people in. A lot of it, it becomes very personal to them, their ideology, or maybe their grandfather was a Democrat or a Republican. And so the way people feel about politics, it's very personal, you see. And the problem is we got to reach that center aisle. We got to reach those people. We got to get the people who love America, the Democrats and the independents and moderates who know the risk, and they know the hypocrisy of a Nancy Pelosi, you know, getting her hair done when she doesn't want anybody else to get it done is wrong. And they don't like this sort of elitist attitude and this arrogance that goes with a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle. So the thing I plead to you all out there is help us bring those people together, because alienating folks and pushing people away is not going to accomplish really anything in the end goal here. I want to take a quick pause here. I want to come back with Lieutenant Joe Pangaral in a moment and talk more about all of this here. There's a lot on the burner here, people, talking about light matches here, huh? More Voice of the Nation in just a moment.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
I put a message out on social media that read this. It said, we are entering the lunacy stage. A stage where a hashtag Kennedy loses in Taxachusetts because he isn't radical enough. A stage where they want to remove Washington from the hashtag Washington Monument. A stage where the hashtag media hacks remind you of their fake polls that Trump is losing. So that was put out on Twitter the other day here, and a lot of responses, but there's one in particular I want to read to you, and I want to read it to you, to listeners, and I want to read it to you, Lieutenant Joe, and tell me what you think of this. And this one person responded, what you're saying is this, America is in the death throes. In a few weeks, the final nail will be placed in her coffin because Democrats will cheat on a massive scale. If for some weird reason Trump manages to win, in spite of the cheating, Democrats will burn America down. That was quite a message. It got quite a bit of traction on the platform. What do you say to that, Joe?
It sounds like in the article that I wrote, Malcolm, I put in there, you said it before too, we can all feel something's going on. We can feel it, we can smell it, we can taste it. This is different. This is a new paradigm for America. Now, could we recover from this? Of course, that's a possibility we could recover, but I think you're right. If Trump wins, even despite all of the cheating that we know is going to go on, that's the reason that they're pushing for this mail-in ballot. They could care. I mean, we can have a million people at a protest. We can't vote. So that's the purpose of all of that, to do that. The next day, if Trump is declared the winner, you will see the anger and the craziness of these people we've seen multiplied compared to what they've done the last 4 years. And that is when you might also at that point see the president take some more stringent actions that he needs to take. Maybe declare this an insurrection. How many cities can burn? People can get killed happening all over the country for the stated reasons of the people that are doing it. Is to destroy the country, tear it down, get rid of our government. That is an insurgency. That is something you have to stop and put down. You know, we have a constitution. We don't cease being America because half the country decides they want to cease being America. That's what the Civil War was.
Right. You have to ask yourself at some point, why are these mayors, why are the mayors, why are people in power, political power, allowing this to go on? We're talking mayors, we're talking governors, we're talking even county commissioners and things of that nature. Like, why are a lot of, in all of these markets, the only common denominator, my fellow Americans, is to be the bearer of truthfulness here, is they are Democrats, Joe, is that correct?
They are, and that's the vast majority of them. And you have to say to yourself, you know, you said it earlier, Malcolm, and I want to comment on it. You know, do the grassroots people realize what they're doing? No, I think they are genuinely people who want change, or they see, you know, this change is necessary. They want to see an end to all the horrors that they perceive in America, and they are useful idiots. They're being used. Not that
useful idiots.
Yeah. Not that their cause is idiotic. You know, ending racism is good. Getting everyone together is good. But they're being used, and that's what normally happens in these movements. You have something else going on behind it, and it's using these people's goodwill to move a bad will point.
That is so well said, Pangaro. That is well said. And when you reference useful idiots, it is appropriate in this case. It doesn't sound nice. It's not something you or I, our mothers would not want to say in that, right, Joe, to somebody else, right, calling them a useful idiot?
I'm uncomfortable saying it, but the reality is, and that's why I wanted to define that. I don't mean they're idiotic. Their heart is in the right place. They're trying to do the right thing, but they're being used.
They're being used as useful idiots. And you're saying the truthfulness of the conversation. And up front in the program, I talked about there's a big Democrat group, Hawkfish. Their headquarters are out of New York, and they warned that a Trump Election Day landslide will probably happen, but then they're going to try to count the votes afterward and get Joe Biden to win, and it's going to put us in major unrest. That will look like the Hangin' Chad episode in Florida. It was a nothingness with Bush and Gore. And they're predicting this now in a big way. And Axios has a whole program on HBO they've got out. And that's very fascinating. And I talked up front in the program, Joe, about that talk about a flashpoint. That would absolutely be a flashpoint. And a lot of people believe this whole thing about universal voting and absentee voting and confusing the American public, that all this is strategic in nature, that has been talked about for some time. They've been laying the seeds down for this for weeks and weeks and months. And people are being used. Americans, sadly, are being used. Good people with goodwill, as you say, that really believe it's the right thing in their heart, but they are being used as useful idiots by two groups. One is the outside influencers and the people who are seeking power, those organized groups we talked about just a bit ago here, Joe. And then you have the political spectrum of the political operatives, which are a lot of Democrats and Republicans both, because you have a lot of centrist establishment people in there. Call them whatever you want. I mean, Republicans are not innocent of a lot of this crap either, Joe. And so now that leaves us in a very delicate situation nobody's being responsible in the room. Nobody's being the adult in the room. And that's what really concerns you here, isn't it?
It certainly is. I need to see people stand up. Like we're having a conversation, Malcolm. We're trying to talk about this. Where are our leaders who should be leading? That's the reason we call them that. Why are they not standing on the steps of the Capitol and decrying this and talking about the value of democracy, the value of our Constitution, and how we have to pay attention to what's happening here? Have the conversation the other way. We're not seeing that.
We're not seeing that. Well, let you and I get on the steps right now and do our megaphone. And here's the thing with what you put out there. Let's talk about this moment and get to it. Because in this piece, I've got to recommend everybody go read Then Someone Lit a Match. It's right at AmericaOutloud.com. It's a very thought-provoking piece for a lot of reasons. And one of the points I want to bring right up now, Joe, playing to the point we just talked about in your article, is where you say this, and I quote, "For once, we had an event, the George Floyd death, that, you know, brought most people together in agreement. Well, that was horrible and should not have happened. There was a national shock to the consciousness that we could have used to make things better. We had consensus. We saw a clear path pointing to addressing some serious concerns about how we do things as a society. It was a chance that doesn't come along too often, a tragedy that ignites our hearts to action. All of us, Americans, agreed we needed to listen to each other and make adjustments on what we expect from our law enforcement people and how we wanted to be policed. We protested together for that change. And then someone lit a match." And this is so strong, Joe, for a lot of reasons. But you're talking about that moment, and you say there was a clear opportunity. And what I want people to understand, that Joe is, you know, he's a retired police officer. His career has been to protect people. I mean, he's Lieutenant Joe. This is what he's done in his life. So for a law enforcement guy to come out and say that, and embrace the problem to say, okay, this could be an opportunity. Let's use this. But Joe, it's created the master divide. It's not unified us. It's divided us more because of those groups. Pretty sad, huh?
It absolutely is. And that's, you know, that's where my heart's at. I understand if we don't listen to each other, Malcolm, and people, just because I don't think it's a legitimate concern doesn't mean it's not a legitimate concern, but you have to have the conversation about it. What are the perceptions? How can we fix things? Can we change it? Do we need to fix something? Well, you can't do any of that if you don't have the conversation. And that moment when we saw what happened to George Floyd, and the investigation will tell you whether he died of a fentanyl overdose or whatever, if the officer actually was the cause of his death. The fact that we saw that scene, that was what galvanized us together to say, okay, let's take a breath. What are we doing here? And I think that has been leading up to this last 3 years of this infighting, this brother versus brother we have in our country, when we can't even talk to people, we unfriend people, we stop meeting with them because of political views. George Floyd was the moment when there was a breath. Okay, we all agree this was not right. Maybe we can have a conversation. But that does not suit the people who are looking for this change. And that's what I'm saying. We're all thinking of doing the right thing here, and people behind it are using the scene as an opportunity to do something else, which is, that's human nature. Look throughout history, these things happen, and somebody lit a match. And instead of having a peaceful going forward and maybe coming to some healing as a nation and addressing concerns, instead, we're burning ourselves down.
So we've got to figure out how to grab that opportunity. So here's the message, my fellow Americans, is this. How do we get to that moment of time to grab that match? So think about it in this terms, please, all of you out there now. How do we get to that moment so we can grab that match, so we can stop that spark from lighting the whole damn book of matches and the whole parade on fire? That's the question we need to be asking ourselves today. And so, Joe, here's what I would say to you. In the piece, you talk about Kyle Rittenhouse in the Fort Sumter moment. Now, Kyle Rittenhouse is the young man who went ahead and killed a couple of people, seriously injured others, I believe, another one. And you say this, could this be the Fort Sumter moment? Explain that.
The Fort Sumter moment was when the first shot was fired that actually started the hostilities in the original Civil War in America. Kyle is been portrayed by the media as a right-wing radical who is out there just to shoot and hurt people, because they're trying to paint a particular picture of the guy to turn our attentions away from the violent mobs that are out there and say, well, this guy is just another one who's causing the problems. And we've seen many commentators coming on saying he and groups like his are really the ones fermenting the violence right in front of our eyes. We can see who it is, but they're changing the narrative. What Kyle may have done in fighting back, because he didn't shoot randomly into a crowd. Mm-hmm. He didn't just kill people he hated. He was there to clean up the town. He was cleaning off graffiti off the buildings. And when you look at the video, and it'll all come out in due time, but when we see the video, we see a kid who's running away from people who are attacking him. And now they're upset that he fought back and protected himself. They were trying to kick him, hit him with a skateboard, throw a firebomb at the guy. What are you supposed to do when that happens to you? You're not allowed to protect yourself anymore? And that's what I saw in the video. And I guess it'll all come out eventually.
So let me ask you this. Does he get off? Do you think that, I know it's going to be a battle royal with the attorneys and everything that's going, but do you see him as self-defense?
From what I saw in the video, Malcolm, it appeared to be self-defense to me. Okay. I mean, he's being hit, he's being attacked and kicked, and he had a gun, so he responded. You know, that's the rules. If you are allowed to have a weapon and you feel your life is in danger, you can protect yourself. You don't have to take the beating, and you don't have to get killed. Right. Now, it's unfortunate that anyone got killed, but when he shot the one guy in the arm, that guy backed away. That guy had a gun pointed at him.
Yeah, but how old is this kid? This is just a 17-year-old, isn't it?
He's 17 years old, but you know what? 17 years old is not an infant child. He's a young
man. No, but is he allowed to have the gun? Does he have it legally? Is it his?
Yes. Well, apparently the story is if he brought it across state lines, he couldn't do that. But now we're hearing from his attorneys that are saying, no, the gun came from somebody in Wisconsin. He was there that day, and he took the gun from somebody who lived there, and he's allowed to carry it. It's an open carry.
I see. So all that's got to come out. But so the question is going to be, is it self-defense or is he up for murder, right?
Correct. Now,
yeah.
in these political times, I would like to tell you that justice will be served. If he's guilty, he'll be found guilty. If he's innocent, he'll be found innocent. This is a political nightmare, and we're going to see politics have a huge play in here. Do you let him go? Is there going to be more violence? That's going to be a determination that's made, whether people believe that those kind of conversations happen or not. We know they do. We've seen them in the past. They will sacrifice people for political reasons. It happens.
Yeah. So every night after night after night after night, our cities are burning somewhere. The destruction is on a really it's a great and grave scale throughout these cities. And again, and it's not mostly, it is conclusively, they're all Democrat markets. I mean, and maybe that the truth is the truth. I mean, this is not about polarizing political conversations. It just is a fact, Joe. So when we say almost, it is, I don't know of any, I don't know of a conservative mayor or governor who's in the way right now. Do you know of one? I'm not aware of one.
I'm not aware of one either. It's ideology. We're in the middle of an ideological battle for the soul of America.
If we're going to rescue the soul of America, back to this flashpoint and somebody lit a match, how are we going to do it? I mean, because those mayors and those governors, they are hell-bent on taking this thing down. I mean, they are hell-bent on making sure that, evidently, I mean, why else would they not stop the violence in these cities? I mean, they're willing to have things vandalized and torn down and break shit up. I mean, they're willing to, they seem to be able, this is like a, it's a cost of doing business for these people at this point. I'm saying, I assume this is all to win an election. I don't know what it is, but it's to create as much chaos as possible, because now you see the left and you see the Biden campaign yelling out, Joe, they're yelling, well, you see, he can't govern. You see, look at all the unrest the guy is creating. He's incapable of doing this thing, right?
And that's the change in the narrative. They're trying to change it right before our eyes. We see the truth, and they're telling us something else. And when the media responds by repeating that lie over and over and over again, we know what happens. People that are at home, that are paying attention on the periphery, they start to, well, yeah, I guess it really is Trump's America, and a Biden would straighten it out. To answer your question, though, Malcolm, how do we prevent this match from being lit and really burning us down? Yeah. We need to stop the violence now. We need to bring order to this chaos. That's the very first thing that has to happen. Mm-hmm. However we're going to do that, that has to be done. We have to stop this conflagration out in the streets, or we're never going to get control of this. That's the problem. You don't protect the forest from a forest fire by letting it continue to burn nice and slow. You put the fire out. Mm-hmm. Then you rebuild. That's where we have to go first.
Yeah. And so they don't seem to be willing to stop it. So it's going to take a real movement. I guess the only thing I can suggest to you, Joe, is it's going to take a movement. It's going to take certainly the kind of work we're doing here, but it's going to take more than just us. I mean, we're going to be loud voices here in the weeks and months ahead for sure at America Out Loud, but it's going to take a movement, don't you think?
I do. And when it starts coming to individual neighborhoods, and people have got to band together. I saw a thing the other day in a residential neighborhood in Colorado. A bunch of Antifa people showed up, and the residents, the moms and the dads, came out with their American flags, and they basically ushered these people right out of their community, screaming, there's a birthday party going on over there. You know, there was a kid's birthday party going on, and these people wanted to protest, scream and holler in a residential neighborhood, and they pushed them out. That's going to have to happen before I think we all get involved. When they come to your neighborhood, what are you going to do? Are you going to acquiesce, or are we going to fight back? And that's, unfortunately, what probably has to happen when you have this kind of a conflict.
Yeah.
There has to be a winner or a loser.
Lieutenant Joe, you're listening to the air. He is excited. He's got a new book out. I want to just plant the seed with you all now. He's super excited about it. It's called The Interview. The Interview. And it's really all about interviewing folks back and forth. And it really gets into law enforcement. As he says right here, it's essential for police corrections and all law enforcement, but really it's for anybody to learn how to do interview style. Am I saying that right, Joe?
You're absolutely right. It's about the understanding the psychology of interview, how human beings interact with each other, and how do you, for the law enforcement people, how do you get information out of a conversation that you need to further your investigation? You know, interview is an art, and that's what I call it.
And the reason it's good, and you hear Lieutenant Joan, if you listen to his show, Chasing Justice, which plays, as you know, on America Out Loud Talk Radio, weekdays at 3 p.m., the thing about it is, Joe is, he's very open-minded. You hear him talking right now, very open-minded. He actually is a great interviewer and great interviewee because he understands the concept of it. It's a give and take. And that's part of probably what made you excellent in law enforcement and policing, Joe, is because everything in life is about give and take, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Everything's a back and forth. And one of the things that I say, Malcolm, when it comes to law enforcement is that police work at its essence is a person-to-person business. It is a very intimate interaction with other people. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean sexual interaction. It just means it is very intimate. You deal with people in their homes at their worst, when they're afraid, when they're victimized, when they've been a perpetrator of a horrible thing. It is a connection to other people. And understanding how humans interact is what makes a successful interview and an interviewer.
Well, there's a lot more. And, you know, ahead here in the next many weeks and months, Joe and I will have another really big conversation about this, I promise you, about the interview. The book will be soon enough in our bookstore. It's not on Amazon yet, but it is available as a pre-order, by the way. And so I'll plant the seed now with you all out there who are big fans of Lieutenant Joe and Chasing Justice. You can just go to looseleaflaw.com is the publisher. Is that right, Joe?
That's correct. Looseleaflaw.com.
Yeah, looseleaflaw.com. And you can pre-order the book there. Just type in Pangaro in the search or what have you, and you should be able to get what you need there. And so that's the way to pre-order that and get that. And I understand there's a 20% off or something, Joe?
Yeah, we have two options. You can get 20% off. There's a code PGTOCT20 for 20% off if you order before October 31st. But something I'm more excited about, the publisher said to me, how can we help law enforcement? Because they publish law enforcement training type of material for first aid, police, and other responders. We got together with Lieutenant Randy from America Out Loud here, and we have a code. Every time someone buys a book, if they use the code PTGWB10, Pangaro Training Guide, Wounded Blue, Randy's Group 10, $1 from every book will go to that group to help our injured police officers across the United States. So they can go to looseleaflaw.com. You can pre-order the book. And if you want to help Lieutenant Randy and the wounded officers in our country, you would put in the code PTGWB10. And $1 from the sale of every book will go to Lieutenant Randy's group to try and help our injured and hurting police officers that are out there throughout our country.
Lots of the program we talked about today. I gave you a lot to think about, a lot of food for thought. There's a lot more conversation we're going to be having in the days ahead here throughout the network here, certainly on my show, but also on Viewpoint on the weekends, of course. Again, I encourage you to invite your friends in, invite your Democrats, your independents and moderates in. This is what we've got to do here. We love all Americans. The key is to build a bridge and make it happen and create a movement out of people who love their country and want to put down this uprising in the way that it should. Thank you, my fellow Americans, for being on the mission. It's time to get involved and get involved.